there was a tax shield program. A tax shield program is the company decides that they will not declare all of your income to the tax authorities, and they call that a tax shield. And companies do that to lower the cost of payroll. Okay? So we get a tax break. That's in effect our salary increase, even though the company does not increase our salaries, because our net income increases because of the tax shield. That's very popular. Unfortunately, I was already a believer, a follower of Jesus. Okay? Unfortunately, you know, all the disadvantages of Christianity. So I made a stupid statement. I told the HR, what if I don't get the tax shield? What happens? Well, Alex, then you won't get an increase, because everyone is going to get a tax shield, so their tax will be lowered. In effect, their net income will go up. But since we don't plan to give any salary increases, you won't get a salary increase. I said, I better call my wife first. And I did. And I said, sweetie, I think this is wrong, and I don't want to get it. She said, go for it. So I told the HR, I don't want a tax shield. She looks at me, said, are you crazy? Said, no, I don't feel comfortable. There were about four or five other Christians. I felt obligated, being the senior executive Christian, to meet with them. And I told them, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but as the elder Christian here, I want you to know what I'm going to do. And I said, I'm not going to get the tax shield because I believe it's wrong. So all of us decided not to take the tax shield. For 2 years, no salary increase. And we were feeling kind of stupid. Then the new president came, the one who got my Oscar. And I told him, because he talked to all of the senior vice presidents. He said, what are your issues? So I told him my issue. I said, George, mine is very simple. The company is supporting tax evasion. He said, explain to me. So I explained to him. He said, you're right. So he said, what do you suggest we do? Well, I said, hey, you can't, you've allowed the people to enjoy that income. You can't take it away from them. That's illegal too. So I said, the only thing, way you can solve this, you gross up everybody. Which means there's a big hit on the bottom line. But he agreed. And so we were all grossed up. And we finally got our salary increases. And the company became tax compliant. You know, people looked at the Christians in Del Monte. They said, these weird people are something else. So, you know, in culture, you talk about humility, you talk about integrity. And you know what? Christianity enjoyed a golden age, if you will, in Del Monte. A lot of people came to the Lord. As in almost everybody in sales and marketing. A lot of people came to the Lord. And the culture became professional and rooted in Christianity. Okay? Okay, what motivates you? Go to that chart. Will you do that? Mark the appropriate box to score yourself on the questions using the following scale. One, never, two, sometimes. These are motivators that are ranked at random right now. Are you with me? That's on page. Okay, those motivators are ranked at random. And if there's a motivator that is not there, put it under others. But what I want you to do in 3 minutes is to rank them according to your preference. Not preference, but according to your motivation. Okay? What motivate you. Ready? Go. Right now, 1 to 12 is at random. I want you to rank them on the right according to your beliefs, to what really motivates you. Then we'll process. Go. Time's up. I actually only need your top three. Okay, look at your top three. Okay? And compare them with the global statistics on top three motivators of employees. Okay? Employees in general. Okay? Not necessarily Christian employees, but in general. The top three motivators are, number one, interesting work. Number two, satisfaction of a job well done. Which would be recognition from superiors, okay? And feeling of being in on things. Okay? Sense of belonging. So, interesting work, satisfaction of a job well done, and it probably relates to recognition from superiors. And feeling of being in on things, that I'm included. Okay. Now, compare that with your motivators. And in a random public seminar, many people would match the global statistics, either one or two or even three of their own motivators. Okay. Money, for some reason, comes in top five. But never top three, believe it or not, okay? So what's the point? The point is this. If the top three motivators of people at work is interesting work, satisfaction of a job well done, and feeling of being in on things, the conclusion I want you to make is this. You can motivate your people more than you think, okay? You can motivate your people more than you think because in and of yourself, okay, can you make work interesting? Yeah. I mean, we had a telephone operator, and her job was to say hello all day. And we said, we're going to enrich your, it's called job enrichment. We're going to enrich your job. You will be the hub of the customer complaints system. Wow. Okay? And so we developed a software. If somebody complains to you, you type into the keyboard name and all the data, and you push the button, it gives the data to everyone. So suddenly her job became interesting. So people like interesting work. Number two, satisfaction of a job well done. Basically, people are motivated by doing a good work. This was a surprise to me because the world is very cynical. We think people don't like to work. Actually, people like to work. People like to do a good work. Now, especially if it is recognized by their superiors. So, can you recognize good work? Well, when you recognize it, do you do something about it? Affirmation box, okay? Post-it note, email, text, okay? And number three, feeling of being in on things, okay? People like to be in on things. When I was in Del Monte, when I was president, we'd have board meetings in Singapore. We were listed in Singapore. I could not bring all the vice presidents or all the senior vice presidents with me, all my direct reports. I had 9 direct reports. But I can only bring 2 or 3 at a time. But there was no envy, no intrigue, because, first of all, I rotated the VPs. Second of all, the first thing I did when I returned from Singapore was to gather all the direct reports and to download to them all of the official chismax. So everybody knew what went on in Singapore. And that's how you give people the feeling of they're in on things. Okay? If a sense of belonging is basically you use bulong, okay? To you give the bulong so that they feel belong, okay?
I like that.
See, people just want to be in on things, okay? Now, married people, listen to me. Your spouse wants to be in on things. What's happening in your life? And husbands don't like to share. What happened in the office? Nothing. How's everything? Okay. But your wife wants to be in on your life. That's how God made her. Wives too. I mean, you know, your kids want to be in on things. We were planning a vacation, and so we told our kids, okay, this year we're going to go to Boracay. But that was going to be next week. And I bought all the tickets already. So Mark, our elder, said, now, wait a minute. How come nobody told me? We forgot all about Mark because Mark does not live with us anymore. And he did not feel that he was in on things, and he kind of made tampo. But it's hard to make tampo for a long time if the ticket is free and the hotel is free in Boracay. But still, everyone wants to be in on things. So, point is this. Understand what motivates you, and understand what motivates people. And the conclusion, you can motivate your people more than you think. You have the capacity to motivate people more than you think. It is well within your power to motivate people more than you think. Closely related to motivation is values. What are your core values as a person? And what do you think are the core values of victory? I want you to go to that chart that says my core values and core values of victory, two columns. And I will give you another 2 minutes. Write down your core values and victory's core values as you perceive them. Okay, I'll be spitting out random perceptions of victory core values. We want to honor God in everything we do. That's kind of clear. Making disciples is a core value. Youth-orientedness, is a core value. These are my own perceptions of victory. Adaptability, I perceive, is a core value. Willingness to be contemporary because of the youth orientation is a core value. I'm going to disturb you as you're writing, but just keep on writing. You got to do this with your team, because a team that shares core values will be more cohesive, okay? We're talking about team culture. And one of the elements of culture is shared values, okay? Now, you can't have shared values in your team and those values are inconsistent with victory values. So, you know, no matter how you word the specific value, the core value, it has to be aligned to the overall core value of every nation. And so, because core values form part of your culture, okay? So you can finish that at home, but I urge you, you gotta bring your team together and thresh out what do we value as a team. Okay, teamwork, by the way, I think is a victory core value. I like it when the pastors, whenever they're going to speak, if they're a guest speaker in the church, the first 10 minutes is spent praising the local pastor. I just am so blessed. That's love for your teammate. It's a core value. So you need to determine if values are aligned. And people may have different 6 core values, but if the majority of them, like 4 to 5, are shared, then there is a basis for a very robust culture. And the reason is because of the impact of values. If you look at that slide, values drive decisions. Decisions drive behavior. Behavior drives results. Therefore, you can say values drive results. Okay? Values are important. You have to be clear on your values, because when you're selecting people to be part of the team, you have to ask them that question. What are your core values? Okay? My favorite interview question is this. I tell the applicant, okay, we're having coffee. He or she has a mug. I have my mug. I say, look, if I distilled your person and dehydrated it and reduced it to a concentrate, so that your entire person is in this mug, and you're down to your core values, what will I see? And then I want to hear something spiritual. I want to hear something family. I want to hear something excellence. I want to hear something teamwork. See, when I hear those kinds of things, I could say, okay, this guy can fit. Because I will tell them our core values, and I'll tell them, can you operate in an environment like this? Okay. Now, of course, they can always posture and lie, but then I test them, okay, give me a circumstance when that core value was tested. Okay? Describe to me a situation when that core value was tested. Okay. So people squirm and they sweat and we judge on the basis of their answers. Okay. Elements of a strong team culture: shared vision and mission. That's very clear in Victory. Shared core values. That's what we're talking about. I think you have shared core values. I have not seen articulation of core values, however. Shared information, transparency, and frankness, as opposed to, information in silos that people, I'm not going to share this with you because information is power and voila, I just want our team better than your team kind of thing. Come on, shared success experiences. The values are promoted visibly and consistently by the leadership's personal example, and shared anecdotes that promote mission, vision, and values. Not Macy's, the other one. Nordstrom. Nordstrom is one of the most successful retailers in the U.S. And they're kind of high-end. They never advertise, but they always position themselves beside Macy's. Macy's is the SM in the U.S., kind of. And Macy's advertises. So Nordstrom just places themselves beside Macy's. But Nordstrom is a wonderful retailer. When my wife went with me to Stanford, the wives had a class as well. They had a case study, and the case study was Nordstrom versus Macy's. And so they were told, walk into Macy's in the Stanford Shopping Center, and then walk into Nordstrom, and measure how many minutes before someone in either department store asks you if you need help. And true enough, in Nordstrom, the amount of time is about less than 20% than the amount of time before somebody asks you in Macy's. Nordstrom, their customer service is so well developed that they have anecdotes and stories about heroic efforts of ordinary salespeople in servicing their customers. And these anecdotes are printed and published in the company's newsletter. So everybody, and sometimes enshrined in some of their plaques, so everybody gets the culture. So if you're a new employee, you read that and you say, so this is the culture here. I mean, we go all out for the customer kind of thing. Okay. So you need to, and I think that's why Steve wrote the book, The Accidental Missionary, because he wanted to preserve the anecdotes, because that forms the a part of the culture of every nation. Okay. All right. We're done with session 7. We go to session 8. Number 6. Session 8 in my... It's number 6. Okay. So we have 5 structural things are in place. We are cultivating managerial competence. We're trying to become people of influence. We are mentoring, coaching, and empowering our people. We're cultivating the attitudes to engender a team culture. Now we want to make the work pace sustainable, if not enjoyable. The last point, okay? You can be an effective people manager and still burn out your people. You must be conscious and intentional about the work pace so that the work pace is sustainable. The issue of sustainability is a big issue, especially in an environment like Victory. You know why? Because you are all gung-ho. You are well-focused. When you have a very clear mission and very clear vision, everyone is gung-ho. And if the manager leader does not watch it, okay, the pace could be unsustainable. And long-term, it's not healthy. So you need to make sure the work pace is sustainable. In fact, enjoyable. Faith-based organizations, ironically, are notorious for burning people out. You know why? It's for the Lord. Why are you complaining? This is for Jesus. And we are notorious for burning people out. We are also notorious for mismanaging volunteers. So we need to learn this. I mean, you know, of course we need to be sacrificial in our work. But let's not use that as a cop-out when confronted with the opportunities to be more professional so that the pace is sustainable, okay? Three basic things managers manage to forget, and this is my wonderful Pepsi experience. Number one, it is possible to burn people, to run people to the ground and burn them out and yourself in the process. Number two, it is expensive to recruit and train new hires, okay? I had a boss in Pepsi, he was so focused. I mean, he was a chemical engineering graduate from Mapua. Then he went to AIM to get an MBA. And he went to marketing. He was a chemical engineer, but he went to marketing because he likes marketing. And so he managed marketing like an engineer. And we were the wonderful recipients of that leadership style. Okay? And he ran us to the ground. It was so hard working for him that you know, our wives were complaining. His solution was not to make the pace sustainable. He sent flowers to our wives. And so when I came home, my wife had a bunch of roses. And she said, "Your boss is even nicer than you. He's giving me roses. You're always working and working and working." So the next day, we all went to his office. We said, "Ed, will you cut it out? If you think you're doing us a favor, you're getting us into trouble." So he cut it out. But we were up to here. I mean, we were working. The stress was so much. I kid you not. The stress was so much. Me and my buddy, Nonoy Kimbo, okay? Me and my buddy, my best friend, the stress was so much, we had bald spots right here. The stress was so much, I was shampooing one day, and I said, "Wow, what's happening here?" So and I asked my wife, "Wouldn't you see this?" And she said, "There's a hole this big without any hair." I had no problem with falling hair. I had thick hair. But there was a hole this big right here with no hair. And that was the stress. But I was young. I mean, when you're young, you can take a lot of stress. But even us young guys were stressed out. And my buddy Nono Kimbo also had the same thing, right? We were like ordained bishops of, of this. One CEO of Pepsi was so, the accurate word is obnoxious, okay? He would walk into a bottling plant, being accompanied by the plant manager. If he did not like what he saw, that plant manager was fired on the spot. And, of course, how would you react? We were all terrified. And I counted, the other night I was preparing my notes, 44 senior executives resigned in a span of 1.5 years. I remember we were having despedidas once a week. I mean, you know, because it was a revolving door. A revolving door. And he didn't care. He didn't care. Okay? So, believe it or not, you can run people to the ground and burn them out and burn yourself out as well. It is expensive to recruit and train new hires. And a sustainable work pace reaps great dividends in the long run. I've proved this in Del Monte. In Del Monte, we used to have a 55% turnover rate. I told my boss, if we don't improve the compensation and other things, at the rate we are turning over, there will be no one in the marketing department, in theory, in 12 months. And so we did a few things, and the turnover rate went down to 5%. Wow. okay? Which is normal. You don't want zero. You want a normal turnover, okay? It's healthy. In 20 years, unit volume grew, compounded annual growth rate of 8.4%. Population is growing 2.7%. If you're growing faster than the population, you're growing your business. We grew 8.4% in unit sales for 21 years, year in and year out, compounded annual growth rate. Net sales, top line, grew 15.7%, compounded for 21 years. Operating income grew 15.6%, compounded 21 years. I mean, these are the kinds of numbers Warren Buffett looks for when he acquires a company. 15%. Now, if we did that in 5 years, that's happenstance. If we did it in 10 years, that might be a coincidence. 21 years. See, those are the dividends of stability in an organization. Indications that the manager has forgotten. Number one, high turnover of people. Low or deteriorating morale. Preoccupation with short-term results. Leaders placing their egos above the mission and vision. And day-to-day priorities swing from one end of the pendulum to the other. The Pepsi executive, I was a plant manager then, he would say, sales are down, you blah, 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 managers, you're worthless. He called me, you are the scum of the earth, Alex. I said, I couldn't believe my ears. And I was, he was seated there on his throne, and you know this pencil holder? He got nice number one Mongol pencils, and I was seated here. I wanted to get that pencil mug, and because I was literally called for the first time and never again, I was the scum of the earth. Why? Because I missed my sales. Why don't you just say you're a lousy salesperson? How can I be the scum of the earth? Anyway, so we go for sales. When you go for sales, you have to let go of your receivables. Well, guess what we get the next day? Your receivables are lousy. Of course they're lousy. We went for sales yesterday. So the pendulum swings. Collect the money. So we collect. The sales go down. Your sales are lousy. Of course. So we go back to sales. And you go like this. And we are on a pendulum swing. And I said, this is not sustainable. And people went crazy. The only thing that kept me there was I needed to put food on the table, and I didn't have an alternative job. But my wife was asking me to quit every day. And one day I did. But, it was unbearable, okay? Unbearable. The worst was when his boss in New York told him, I've committed this bottom line to the board. Then the boss here told him, we can't deliver. He said, you gotta deliver. And so this boss here said, he told everybody, you gotta deliver. By this time I was in Warner Lambert. I'm hearing this secondhand. So I told my friends, my old friends, what did you guys do? Alex, believe it or not, we faked sales. I can speak about this because this is 30 years ago. They faked sales, okay? Very nicely. Because they paid taxes on fake sales. Is that ridiculous or is that ridiculous? So I said, how will you pay for the sales? It's fake sales. Well, he wants the bottom line. We can't deliver it. So we just fix the books. I'm talking to people who are begging me to hire them because they want out. And they're telling me their stories. So what happens? Well, life being what it is, next year the economy is worse. They fake sales again. Pay taxes again. Okay? Now, we thought it was unique to the Philippines. It was happening in Mexico as well. Because this egomaniac decided that his image to the board was more important than the mission of the company. Okay? And what happened? Well, auditors came, the typical annual audit. Thing blew on their faces. The company declared the losses, the real P&L. They even applied for a tax rebate to the government. And that's why PepsiCo Inc. left the country and sold it to a local bottler. and only recently bought it back. Before that, Pepsi was the market leader here. Did you know that? The only country on earth where Pepsi led Coke. That was during our time. And that all went down the drain. See? Because egos were placed above. And that executive, when the thing exploded, was fired. He was charged. And he was either killed or committed suicide. But he died. And there are two theories. One, he was killed because he was going to speak to the FBI, or he died. We're not sure. But that's that's the kind of stories I have that are incredible. Okay, so two things managers need to remember. This is a Christian worldview now. As a manager leader, in truth, you are a servant. You're a servant of God to care for the people he has entrusted to your leadership. And as God's manager, leader, servant, you are your people's under-shepherd. Okay? Jesus is the shepherd. We are under-shepherds, as in secretary and under-secretary. There's a book, The Shepherd's Way. Have you read that? Okay, it's an excellent template for good people management. Basically, it says, be professional, efficient, even sacrificial for your flock's sake. Shield them from undue external pressure and stress to help them perform well. Know your flock, one sheep at a time, and engage them on a regular basis. And when you look into the status of the work, also look into the status of your people and act accordingly. Okay, when you follow people up, what do you see? Are they about to break down? See, when you look at the status of the work, also look at the status of the people and act accordingly. Slow it down. Tone it down. Make adjustments. Because these people, you need them tomorrow and next week and next year. You need them for the rest of their lives, for the rest of their commitment to the work. What can you do as a manager? Okay, number one. Ensure that all goals are mission and vision aligned. You should not have any goal that is not aligned to the mission and vision. If it is not aligned, ask the question, why are we doing this? Okay, and if there's no sufficient answer, drop it. Number two, by the way, what if it is your boss whose goals are not aligned? What should you do? After praying very hard, diplomatically, tell your boss, excuse me, will you explain to me how this goal is aligned to the mission and vision? Because I don't see it. Maybe I'm missing something. Okay? That's the problem. When I do public seminars, people say, Alex, I wish you'd talk to our bosses. Well, that's a problem. They sent you here, not them. So there's a seminar, 360-degree leadership. How to manage horizontally, vertically, diagonally. You can manage your boss, but it's a very difficult thing to do. But let me just stop there. It's all is not lost. By the way, senior pastors are going to go through this seminar as well. So you can rest easy. Number two, sweat the planning details. Okay. Now, this is where a lot of managers fail. Why? Because planning involves thinking. And thinking is one of the hardest things to do. I'd rather do than think. Because doing gives me gratification. Instant gratification. Action. Yeah. And then mess. You gotta think and plan. You gotta sweat the details. Because the better the quality of planning, the less firefighting down the road, the less stress for your team. Be flexible on deadlines without compromising the mission and vision. Now, there are deadlines that can't be pushed, okay, so you just tough it out. But where a deadline can be pushed back without compromising the mission and vision, for the sake of your team, by all means push it back. Okay, by all means. Don't be arbitrary. My boss in Pepsi before was, he refused to be flexible. Just because he said, oh no, we've already said it, we must do it on that day. I said, look, What's going to happen if we don't do it on that day? Nothing. But Alex, you know, you have to learn how to keep your... Oh, come on. Come on. It's just you and me. What were you talking about? You know? But he would not budge. And I thought that was so unreasonable. And so I told him, look, Ed, release me. He said, release me because I'm not gonna last. He said, what do you mean? I said, release me from this day-to-day hounding of yours. Let's agree on objectives and a broad timetable. If I don't make it, you fire me. But I'm telling you, you have trained us very well, and parang you yourself don't believe in what you've done to us. You've done a lot more for us than you think. So I said, release us, and then we'll take care of it for you. And he was surprised. He did release us to his credit. And he was surprised. I said, so that's the problem with this guy. He doesn't know us. Because he refused to delegate. So he never knew the strength of his own team. So by the time he was expatriated, he was very pleased that we had grown. And we were very pleased that we survived. Okay. Number four, communicate regularly. Upwards, downwards, horizontally, to anticipate changes that will affect your team's workload. So you are the shepherd. See, be a good shepherd. Okay? You know, memorize Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You have prepared before me a table in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me every day of my life. You know what? When you read that verse and you apply it to yourself as a manager, imagine what the shepherd does for the sheep. See? And you need to be a good shepherd. 5 and 6, we will deal in detail. Manage activities to get the highest return on time and cultivate a situational supervisory style. Let's do time management first, okay? Some principles. You cannot manage time. It is a finite, inflexible resource, okay? Time management is the biggest joke on earth. Because whatever you do, it's still 24 hours. And by the way, you can't reduce it. You can't prolong it. You can only manage activities to improve your yield from time. Circumstances drive what's urgent. Values drive what's important. And you must beware of the tyranny of the urgent. Okay? I introduce to you what you probably know already, Stephen Covey's time usage grid. Okay? Getting the highest return on time. On the vertical axis is importance. On the horizontal axis is what? Urgency. On importance, it goes from bottom up, going 0 to 100 or low to high, and from urgency, it goes 100 to 0 or high to low. So what turns out is there are four quadrants, and quadrants 1, 2, 3, and 4. The first quadrant, it's high importance, high urgency. He calls it the quadrant of management. Anthony Pangilinan calls it the results now quadrant, okay? Examples, your boss wants a report on a youth activity. Well, that's your boss. That's important. And he says, now. That's urgent. So that's quadrant one, okay? Quadrant two, the leadership quadrant. This is high importance, very important, but not urgent. Example, quiet time. Is that important? Yes. Is it urgent? No. Spending time with your disciple. Is that important? Yes. Is that urgent? No. Spending time with your spouse. Is that important? It better be. Is it urgent? No. Spending time with your children. Is that important? Yes. Is it urgent? It depends what they need. But generally, no. So that's quadrant two. Quadrant three, low importance but high urgency. Give me an example. Low importance, high urgency. Last day, midnight madness sale. Is that urgent? Yes. Is it important? The women are having a hard time saying no. But you see what I mean? Last day for the Varikai show. Have you seen, did anybody see Varikai? Huh? No, Cirque du Soleil? Wow, what an expensive show, but what an incredible show. Okay? If it's, you know, is it important? No. In the larger scheme of things, no. But is it urgent? Yeah, if you want to watch it. Okay? So that's quadrant three. Quadrant four, low importance, low urgency. Is the quadrant, quadrant three is the quadrant of deception or regret, according to Anthony Pangilinan, growth and development for leadership. Quadrant four is a quadrant of waste, or as Anthony would put it, the quadrant of deterioration. These are low importance and low urgency project activities. Example, watching a random TV show. That's low importance, low urgency. Why do it? Randomly surfing the internet with no purpose. Is it important? No. I don't even know why I'm doing it. Is it urgent? No. So why are you doing it? I don't know. So, where does your time go? Okay. If you want to make the pace sustainable, activity management to improve yield on time is very critical for a manager, leader, and the shepherd. So, question, where does your time go? Before the coffee break, I want you to take 5 minutes and list down a sampling of your activities in a typical week in each quadrant. Because I don't care what you tell me your values are. Where your time goes is what your values are. Again, this is a self-appraisal. Just between you and the Lord. Go. Okay, I just wanted to get you started. Because if I tell you do this at home, you'll never do it. So I thought I'd get you started. Because in a given week, if you feel harassed, do this. And find out if the basis of your harassment is valid. Okay? Because effective people spend the majority of their time on quadrant two. The leadership and growth and development activities, okay? You remember what we were talking about earlier? Unless you spend time to develop your people, you will not achieve, your team will not achieve breakthrough goals, okay? Mentoring is quadrant two, okay? Something that is not important, something that's not urgent, but very important, okay? You can't, it's like watching a tree grow. You know it's growing, but you can't see it. And since you don't see it, you don't think, if the urgency is not there, we don't do it. We always fall for the tyranny of the urgent. We must plan better so that we can carve more time for quadrant two activities. Some practical tips. Establish what activities are non-negotiable. Okay? So, do that. If you're married, it's good to discuss with your spouse. What are non-negotiable? You know, we must go out once a week. Okay? Whatever. Identify and eliminate activities that waste time. And you have no idea what an incredible amount of time we waste. Simply because we don't pay attention. Lunch, coffee break, commuting, other travel time offer huge opportunities for high return activities. I was telling people at lunch, in Del Monte, I never eat lunch alone. Because there's too much time that is wasted. So I always ate lunch with either the whole executive team or one or two of them. So because it's always time to develop a relationship. Okay, I will put a microchip in your head that will change your life forever. Lunch break and coffee break is part of work. Break time is the weekend. If you replace the microchip in your head that coffee break and lunch break if you replace it and say they are part of work, you will discover 7.5 hours a week. 5 hours, 1 hour a day for lunch, and 15, 15 in the morning, 15 in the afternoon, that's 30 minutes. 1.5 hours a day times 5 is 7.5 hours. on the average, you will discover 7.5 hours a week that will not take time from your family, from your whatever, okay? Because you need to understand how much time we waste, okay? How much time we waste. Your goal is to plan better, identify other blocks of passive time which can be used for high-value activities. I mean, you guys go to get a haircut? That's what, 45 minutes? You know, you could listen to something. Girls, you try to change the color of your hair? It's half a day. I'm amazed how long it takes. And you know what? I picked up my wife from the beauty parlor the other day, and I saw two teenagers with iPods and a laptop. I said, that's terrific. Right. That's terrific time management. Okay? 10 minutes, coffee break.